The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 23rd of February. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show and planning to keep you informed and entertained over the next 3 hours. I hope you will agree. We want you involved in the conversation. 0860 25000 WhatsApps and texts. And you can use that number as well if you have any relationship questions, because Keely is back, and I think she's back for the first time this year, answering your relationship questions. So obviously, you know, sometimes it's difficult to speak to those around you. You don't want to talk to your brother or sister or your mum or dad or your best friend in case they judge you and your partner's relationship, or it could be a relationship with a sibling. If you need some assistance as to how to resolve a problem you have in your life as it relates to relationships, in confidence, get in touch with us right now. 086 60 25000. You can call us as well if you wish, on any matters, of course. 07491 25000. And emails come into us at comments@highlandradio.com. And just to remind you, as I always do, but new people tune in every day, if you want to watch the program on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, open up the YouTube or Facebook Watch app, search at Highland Radio, like and subscribe us there, or you can watch on those apps via your smart devices like your phones and your tablets and all that manner of thing. All right, let's look at the papers. It's a Thursday, so plenty ahead. A new significant delay of up to 6 months could see the four-lane road project running almost a year behind schedule. And this comes as no surprise to me. In my conversation with Councillor Donald Mandy-Kelly, I suggested that it would be much later in the year. With information I was receiving, it's the same information clearly the paper has here. Donegal County Council has confirmed the project is delayed once again, and the entire project is not expected to be completed until autumn, around 1 year after the initial completion date. The project between the Polestar roundabout and Dry Arch roundabout was expected to be complete by the end of March. And the problems, as they have right from, it seems, the get-go around the crossing of the river there. You'll know that shuttering that's there temporarily at the moment, and there was big delays in original plans and plans being changed and back and forth. Not everything that we know, because much of those conversations go on behind closed doors. We just suffer the inconvenience. On to the Donegal Democrat now. GEA officials and Carl Lacey are understood to be in talks regarding the future of the Donegal Academy. A fallout led to head of academy development Lacey and around 40 coaches quitting their positions earlier this month. It's understood County Chairman Fergus McGee has met with Lacey and further discussions are planned. McGee said he did not wish to speak publicly on the dispute, although is hopeful of commenting on the matter next week. Lacey resigned from his position almost 3 weeks ago and was followed by the entire coaching staff a week later. The 2012 Footballer of the Year cited a lack of support in his message to his fellow coaches to announce his resignation. A lot going on in that story, I'd imagine. The Tyrconnell Tribune speculates if Joe McHugh is coming back to Fine Gael or is heading back to Fine Gael. Well-informed speculation that Deputy Joe McHugh is considering rejoining the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party has energised the grassroots in Donegal. However, McHugh's decision will be informed by the terms of the latest MICA redress scheme. But in the Donegal constituency, that tiny flicker of speculation is seen in Fine Gael circles as the clearest indication yet that McHugh may be tempted to run for election once more, especially given the fact that no obvious runners have raised their heads. Would he? I don't know. I mean, what would be in it for him? I think he made a sound decision in the one that he did. But anyway, and also, really, I can't see the new terms of the MICA redress scheme satisfying those affected by the crises. And then at that point, would Joe McHugh return to Fine Gael if the defective concrete block movement was not happy with the scheme? I don't see it. But anyway, listen, that's the good thing about politics. We can all sort of have a bit of speculation. The national media is giving a different spin to McHugh's decision to retire, saying this will give Charlie McConnellogue a real chance of holding on to his seat. And since Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are now really close friends for the first time ever, and I'm reading here, their transfers can be expected to travel in much bigger numbers, contrary to the previous 31 general elections since 1922. All right, much more speculation on that. Informed speculation, it has to be said, in that paper today. The Derry News tells us that a protest has been held at the site of one of Derry's most notorious potholes. As it emerged, there are over 67,000 official potholes across the north. Can you imagine? They're actually counting them. According to recent government data analysed by CompareNI.com, 7,076 of those are in the Derry City and Strabane District Council area, although this figure is actually a slight decrease from 2021. Potholes are causing widespread damage for drivers. Quite a bit of information. I wonder, do we have a, in the Republic, in Donegal, have a, do they know how many potholes there are? And a protest at a pothole, that would be something interesting to see. The Irish Independent this morning. A leading bank is in contact with Gardaí as part of an investigation into an alleged fraud scandal involving a retired GEA star. Sources at the Irish Bank confirm they have been engaging with members of the Garda National Economic Crime Bureau since details of all the allegations against the man emerged. It's understood Gardaí are now carrying out inquiries regarding the former player's financial history and previous dealings with banks. Gardaí yesterday arrested the man under Section 6 of the Criminal Justice Offences Act, and he can be held for questioning for up to 24 hours. And perhaps people now are starting to put two and two together. Gardaí in the Eastern Region have arrested a male in relation to an ongoing investigation into alleged fraud, a spokesperson said. And Garda Síochána O'Connor does not comment on named persons. Another poll out front of the Irish Times this morning and shows that... Well, it's a poll of the popularity of political parties. Sinn Féin are at 35%. They're unchanged in 4 months. Fine Gael at 22%. They're unchanged over the last 4 months. Fianna Fáil, they're down 3%. So a significant drop for them since Micheál Martin took over as Taoiseach. The Green Party, they are as you were at 4%. Labour Party have taken an extra point. They're also at 4%. In terms of leadership approval, satisfaction ratings in various individuals, Mary Lou McDonald's satisfaction rating is 42%, down 3%. Leo Varadkar's approval rating is at 43%, down 1%. Micheál Martin unchanged at 45%. Eamon Ryan at 22%. He's up 2%. So reading on here, support for Fianna Fáil has slipped since Micheál Martin left the Taoiseach's office. I got that the other way around. Since he left, not took over. Fianna Fáil has slipped since Micheál Martin left the Taoiseach's office in December, with the latest Irish Times Ipsos poll showing a 3-point drop for the party since last year. Support for Fine Gael and the Green Party holds firm, and satisfaction for the coalition and its leaders remains largely steady. Sinn Féin remains by some distance the most popular party, with 35% of voters who express a preference saying they would vote for that party in a general election. That result would put Sinn Féin in the driving seat to form the next government, with by far the largest number of seats in the Dáil. But it remains unclear who might join the party in a coalition or if Sinn Féin would end up in government at all. The drop in support for Fianna Fáil, which declines by 3 points to 18%, is the only noticeable movement in party support since the last Irish Times Ipsos poll. The Irish Daily Mail highlights, I'm sure, what many people out there are actually enduring and know all about. More than 66,000 pensioners are living in consistent poverty. I don't like referring to them as pensioners, but people of an age that they receive a pension, older people, they are living in consistent poverty in Ireland. 66,000. The total was almost treble since 2019, when 22,700 people over the age of 65 were in the same dire situation, numbers from the CSO show. Inflation coupled with the cost of living crisis means tens of thousands of elderly people are struggling with the price of home heating, transport and basic necessities. And it's not hard to work out why, because many pensioners, many older people are on a fixed income. There's a little variation in it if there's a slight increase the time when the budget is announced. But the reality is it's certainly not enough to absorb the cost of living increases. And they're already living week to week. And obviously every increase makes things even worse. It's head of advocacy. Inflation coupled with the cost of living crisis means tens of thousands of elderly people are struggling with the price of home heating oil, as I mentioned there. This according to Age Action. The head of advocacy, Celine Clark, said that the results of the survey on income and living conditions highlighted the need for an increased state pension to protect elderly people's quality of life. Would anyone vote against that? I think that's what people would want. It should happen. Now, it's obviously the big story of today. We'll be discussing it as part of the main show, of course. But it's only papers late to print that and got delivered up to the Northwest that carry this story. And this is that of a senior PSNI officer. He was gunned down yesterday, just minutes after he'd been coaching a youth football team. It's thought that around 67 young people were at the sports facility in Omagh, County Tyrone, when the gunman opened fire on the officer at around shortly, just before 8 p.m. This is a slight spelling misprint here. According to unconfirmed reports, around 7 to 10 shots were fired at the policeman, with 3 or 4 hitting him, and it was a callous attack. It's really sad, and it's shocking, because this doesn't happen as much anymore. It's been a number of years, I think, what, 6 or 7, since we had a police officer in Northern Ireland shot. This happened at a hugely popular sports venue in Omagh. And I'm thinking of young people, you know, who are seeing firsthand maybe what they heard from their parents or grandparents, a new generation seeing what can happen in Northern Ireland. The police officer has been named. He's obviously very seriously injured, but he's stable. He was shot a number of times. He ran off. They followed him, shot him again. 2 people shooting into him. But he has survived. And the hunt is on now for those who are responsible. And there has been widespread condemnation of that attack. On to the Sun. Now, this is a story that has been covered greatly in the media. It's a small enough old party, the Social Democrats, but apparently it's quite significant that Catherine Murphy and Roisin Shortall have quit as co-leaders of the party. Nominations for the next boss will close within 2 weeks, with first-time TD Holly Cairns already favourite for the job. I think the 4 TDs, so the pack of contenders is quite thin. Murphy and Shortall started the party with Stephen Donnelly. Where's he now? He's the health minister. But they started it with him in 2015. The Social Dems now have 6 TDs and 19 councillors. So I suppose it's not insignificant. I did them a disservice. 4 TDs and the 2 leaders, I suppose, make 6. Both TDs yesterday said they are committed to contesting the next election, but they'd step down to hand the reins to the next generation. Are you a Social Democrat supporter? Does that affect you? Oh, wait, 60-25,000. Front of the Irish Farmers Journal. I'll tell you, if you're getting it, there's plenty to read. It's as thick as a phone directory. Over 50 new eligible items, a higher grant aid of 60% or up to it, and increased investment ceilings were unveiled in the new TAMS 3 scheme launched this week. There are new items for most sectors, ranging from cattle fencing, roadways and calving cameras to bale spitters, tillage and slurry equipment. There's also a new package of grants for farmers with horses. Applications also opened this week for grant aid for solar panels to power both farmhouses and sheds. However, farmers are still waiting for crucial terms and conditions for other investment and clarification on the controversial exclusion of dribble bars. And last but not least, do you remember from time to time stories would come up of people who assist school children crossing the road, them receiving abuse and all? I kind of thought that was a thing of the past, and I kind of thought it was a British thing, if I'm being honest. And I'm not saying it didn't happen in Ireland, and it's not an anti-British statement. It's just not something really I thought happened an awful lot here. I thought where I was reading about it was from Britain. Does that make sense? Well, apparently a primary school has difficulty finding someone to become the new lollipop person after the last one retired following abuse from angry motorists. For the past 3 months, over 245 children have had no crossing guard at Castlemartin National School in County Cork. From 7 a.m. onwards, heavy traffic floods the village as commuters try to get to Cork City. Castlemartin Parents Association, their spokesperson Dave Scully, said before the last worker left, she said she found the position to be dangerous and that she was getting abused. Since then, Cork County Council has been trying to recruit someone to take up the role, but there has been no success. Wow. So are you, have you been a lollipop person before? Maybe you're one of the people that gets angry at them. Get it off your chest now. It can be part of your recovery. Tell us why you would give out to someone just trying to help children cross the road a little bit more safely. But maybe you've got experience of it yourself. Let us know. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. Now, across the water, a number of supermarkets are introducing limits on the purchase of some fruits and veg. Morrison's and Asda have reported problems with supplies of things like tomatoes, peppers and broccoli because of bad weather in Spain and North Africa. Are we going to see the same here? Barry Murphy's a news reporter with the Irish Farmers Journal. He joins us now. Morning, Barry.
Morning, Greg. Thanks
good
for having
to have
us
you on.
On
the programme. Right, what are the Irish retailers saying? Because I presume we all draw from the same international markets.
We do indeed. And you mentioned there are some UK supermarkets. Well, it is, I suppose, a problem in Ireland as well. There's been some shortages in the last week of tomatoes and cucumbers in particular. And I suppose the IFA kind of put hit the nail on the head last night or yesterday when they were out with a comment saying that, look, it's, I suppose, a symptom of a broken food supply chain, is how they're describing it, with an imbalance of power between, say, the horticultural grower or the farmer, the middleman, the packer or the wholesaler, and then the retailer. And they're saying it's a symptom of that, you know, that's led to these shortages. But I suppose the crux of it is, and as you said there, it's been about bad weather there in Spain, Italy and Morocco. And they'd be countries that we traditionally would import the likes of tomatoes and cucumbers from. And we kind of ramp up our own supply there. And I suppose it'll come on stream about the middle of next month and into April and May before we see any big volumes. But at that stage, we still only, I suppose, supply about 55% of our cucumbers and tomatoes. So we're very heavily dependent on kind of importing those products, because we don't have the climate to grow them here. But in the first week of January, there was a bout of heavy frost in Spain in particular. And in some parts of southern Spain, there was snow on the ground even. So unusual for that part of the world for that part of the year. And what it did was it really hit the tomato and cucumber crops. And the ripple effect of that is now when they should be ripe, 6 to 7 weeks later, the supply isn't there. And it's driven up the price of those products. So I was talking to one tomato grower from Dublin, Matt Foley is his name, and he was explaining that the current prices are just, they've really rocketed in terms of wholesalers bringing that produce into Ireland for sale to retailers, and they're just not doing it. So your typical kind of 250 gram punnet of cherry tomatoes, for example, they come in 9-pack boxes, and they would traditionally cost maybe €6 to €8 for the wholesaler to bring into Ireland, and they've gone up to about €28 this week. So they're just not buying them, and they're not supplying to Irish supermarkets at the moment. But it is a symptom, as I said, the IFA are saying it's a broken supply chain, and it's not looking good for Irish producers here either over the coming weeks and months.
Why is that?
Well, again, I suppose, look, it's reflective of the inflationary economy at the moment. They've really been hit hard with the likes of gas prices, for example, and rising electricity costs and rising cost of labour and so on. I was talking to another producer there, Shane Halpin. They produce cucumbers in Rush in Dublin, and they would traditionally plant or sow their cucumbers in January of each year. But because they just can't afford the gas to warm their greenhouses at that time of year, they've pushed it back to March last year, and they're not sowing again until next month this year. So that kind of produce coming on stream, it's coming on stream later, which doesn't have the gap or the shortage coming from the markets we import from. And they're saying, look, it's all looking towards an era of cheap food coming to an end. They simply can't afford to stay producing at the levels they are, and that they're having to produce later in the year and to some extent produce lower volumes.
This will settle down, though, in terms of the international markets, will it not? Because presumably we get different stuff from different places at different times, and the turnaround from some of this produce and in how it's grown is relatively quick. So we're not looking at 2023 without tomatoes. In the next couple of weeks, things should start resolving themselves somewhat.
You could say that, yeah. Look, I think, it's safe to say we will have, for summer barbecues and salads, we'll have a few tomatoes and cucumbers about. They won't be gone altogether, but I suppose, look, no, it's looking like, that frost has had its impact now, that frost and that snow in Spain. But for crops maybe sowed a bit later or planted a bit later, that they kind of got away and escaped that impact again. But it reflects, though, I suppose, what the farmers here are saying is the retailers are currently paying, like I said, they're that €6 to €28 per box jump in terms of the price of tomatoes. They're paying more now than what they would pay if they paid an Irish producer a little bit more. That producer, could spend that on the gas needed to heat the greenhouses and be producing it at a lower cost. So it's a lose-lose situation at the moment. The retailers are paying more, and through that, I suppose the consumer eventually is going to be asked to pay more. But if the retailer could provide maybe a stronger base price for the Irish producer, they could afford that gas to grow the produce here. And that's kind of the frustrations they're sharing with the farmers.
The consumer can do its bit too, because there are local suppliers as well, which they can tap into. Now, I do note some stores are putting buying limits on some produce. I'm not sure if that's happened here yet. Definitely happened in Britain, perhaps Northern Ireland. Now, I don't think this is a bog roll bandit situation. I think really what they're afraid of is restaurants and what have you who are struggling with their own supplies going in and buying up the produce for supermarket customers, really. I think there's still stuff to go around if people don't try and hoard it. Although, who'd be hoarding tomatoes?
You'd wonder, Greg, yeah, but I suppose you might have seen there yourself the tweets and the kind of the social media commentary, particularly in Britain, from people going into their supermarket and being, one, frustrated that the fresh produce they're looking for isn't there, and two, just, you know, frustrated that they're being, when it is there, they're only allowed by, say, I don't know if it's two cucumbers or three cucumbers or whatever it is, but, you know, there's a control on the volume they can buy. And again, look, it's reflective, though, of our global food markets. You know, we don't produce in Ireland all the food we eat here. We import and we export, and it's that trade that goes back and forth. But it's reflective, I suppose, of the importance of the primary producer in the supply chain, the farmer, the grower. And it's not just an Irish thing at the moment. For growers hit by inflationary pressures brought on by the war in Ukraine last year, they're really struggling. Mm-hmm. Another example of it would be the egg packer, or the egg producers, egg farmers in Ireland. We have another piece in the Farmers Journal this week looking at their frustrations over price, and some of them are going out of business. They'll be particularly up around your part of the country, in the likes of Cavan, Monaghan, where it'd be a strong poultry area of the country, and they're looking at it where, you know, they're getting at that margin squeeze where their input costs, be it the cost of feed, the cost of electricity and labor, are really have skyrocketed, and then they're just not getting that give back from the retailer and down through the egg packer, and they're getting that margin squeeze and that income squeeze that's just driving them out of business.
Yeah, okay, it's all very interesting, and I think it's really quite interesting too that we see that, you know, we talk about supply chains and, you know, what is it, the phraseology about the next day thing, and we had that conversation when there's really bad snow here and the lorries couldn't get around, but also how quickly, you know, a spell of poor weather in some of these countries that produce what we consume, how quickly it can have quite a serious knock-on effect. And I suppose maybe with those with an eye on climate change might say, you know, well, this could be something we might have to get used to. I haven't heard that conversation more widely. This is a random spell of weather in Spain. But it just goes to show, you know, how things can change so very quickly in what we take for granted.
Very much so. And it's, again, look, reflective. I think that the farming community and producers, they often get kind of maybe tired with, you know, that they're not aware of climate change. They don't see it happening and that they're the main contributor to it. But farmers, horticulture growers every day are seeing the impacts of climate change year on year. And, you know, that whether it's the dry period towards the end of last summer in August and September, or whether it's, you know, Spanish farmers looking at frost in the first week of January, when they traditionally would have that much warmer climate, you know, it is happening, and it will change going forward how we produce food both in Ireland and wider afield. And, you know, there'll be opportunities and, I suppose, challenges within that.
All right, Barry, keep up the great work, you and the rest of the crew at the Farmers Journal. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, bye-bye. Take care. Right, some of you commenting on Facebook as it relates to the lollipop person's getting abused. James says, sounds to me that the crossing guard needs to take their stop sign and whack the irate driver and tell them to STFU. Now, we would never condone such behaviour. Dara also messaging, hi Greg, I saw you in Kilmacrenan shop yesterday. Yes, you did indeed, and I was a very good boy. I actually had a tuna roll because of the day that was in it. Say hello to Bridget O'Shaughnessy in Kilmacrenan from her grandson Dara, who's also listening. All right, great to have you on board. Keep all your calls and comments coming in to 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. With regards to DJ Carey and the AIB bank debt write-down, says a listener, I had a business that had to close down, sold off all my stock and assets to make sure everyone I owed money to got paid fully. Then went to the bank and asked how much I owed them for the business loan and paid every last cent of it early and got no relief from them. I wonder how you feel now, though. Do you feel that you did the right thing and you have to live your life and you've no regrets? Or do you think, wow, you know, I was foolish there. I should have put myself first. I wonder how you feel. What's going on with the exchange rate when shopping in the Republic versus the north of Ireland, says a listener. What an item costs in a chain store in Northern Ireland is half of what it is in the Republic. How is it justified? I can change my euro to sterling and still get it cheaper in the north. Well, we've been through this before, Charlie, I think it is, that messaged in. there's different VAT rates on different things, different import charges, you know yourself. So it's not like for like. The difference in value of a product in the north and south, and in some cases it's vice versa, is not simply the difference between euro and sterling. There are other charges in terms of bringing stuff in through Dublin versus Belfast, or the import charges, or VAT on certain items. We have items in the Republic that we charge VAT on, and in the north they don't. So I imagine that's as much to do with it as anything else. For those going off sugar, Valencia is a listener. I've just disappeared today. Sorry, I've just learned today that there are 56 different names for sugar. How sweet for reading the label. All right, okay. Thanks, random, but we love a bit of randomness. Right, okay. Let us travel now. Let's move now our attentions to the north of Ireland. An attempted murder investigation has been launched after an off-duty police officer was shot at a sports complex in Omagh in Tyrone. Detective Chief Inspector John Caldwell was hit multiple times by two gunmen after coaching young people at football, and police said he was putting balls in the back of his car around 8 p.m. accompanied by his young son. He remains in a critical but stable condition at Altnagelvin Hospital. There's been broad, widespread condemnation of this crime. Councillor Errol Thompson joins us now. And it's awful, Errol, isn't it, that we're talking about an incident like this again? And particularly, I imagine, for you, as you would be, you would know, have known John for a long time as well.
Yeah, thank you for letting me on this morning. First of all, I would like to totally condemn the savage act of terrorism against John Caldwell. And the fact that it was done in front of so many children is really put violent republicanism beyond the pale at this time. I have known John Caldwell from when he was about 13 years of age. I know him and his family very well. And I would call myself a personal friend of John's.
And I was saying a little earlier on, it's awful, isn't it? An awful lot of young people, that this very popular complex, it's awful, isn't it, that they're having to witness and wake up this morning to events that are of the past, or we hope they were of the past, that their parents may have related to them, or their grandparents. A new generation of young Northern Irish people from all different communities at this complex being faced with, you know, what a lot of us are so familiar with, Errol. We really hoped it was just a thing of the past.
Yeah, we all hoped that. I suppose growing up in the town of Omagh, I've experienced a fair bit of terrorism that has affected our town over the years. I think particularly of 1998 with the Omagh bomb and everything that happened before that, from 1970 on. I'm old enough to remember all of that. And then obviously in 2011, the murder not too far away from the scene of this last night's incident, the murder of Constable Roland Kerr. I was one of the first on the scene after that incident, and I was there last night after this one, and I was there this morning again. It's a very traumatic experience for all those young children, and especially his young son, who was with him at the time, and he was attacked.
There's no doubt this was an attempted assassination, given the description of what went on, that both of the assailants fired their weapons. John ran off, fell to the ground. They continued to fire their weapons at him. I don't think we can be in any doubt, can we, that the aim of this attack was to murder him. Can we speak, maybe you even don't want to give it the time of day to talk of a motivation, but who would do this? Why would they do this? Why would they target this person in this fashion?
Well, I just... my own view is that there's still people out there, and the finger in Omagh here this morning, and we're all in a state of shock and disbelief, and quite a bit of anger as well. And that finger is firmly being pointed at violent republicanism at this time. I mean, we're no strangers to that. As I've mentioned, the previous incidents we've had in this town, and I welcome what Orla Begley MP has said this morning, and I would encourage anybody
Okay, the phone line. Sorry, the phone line broke down. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, pick it up there.
I would appeal for anyone with any information to bring it to the Police Service of Northern Ireland immediately, so that these terrorists can be brought before the courts and put away for a very long time.
Are you in any way encouraged that there has been widespread strong condemnation of this, with calls from all quarters for anyone with any information to bring it to the police, no matter how small it might be? Is that at least something that might feel a little bit different than times of the past?
Yeah, well, I'm encouraged by that, but the same happened in the aftermath of the murder of Roland Kerr in 2011, and in the aftermath of the Yuma bomb in 1998. So I welcome all the condemnation, but we need to see actions coming from that now, as to get these terrorists put away.
And very finally, is there any update on John Caldwell's condition at this time?
Well, I suppose all we can do is the official line at the minute is that he's critical but stable. And I hope and I'm praying very hard that John will make a full recovery from this terrible situation that he's in. And we pray for his family circle at this time as well.
All right, Councillor Errol Thompson, thank you for your time this morning. Now, we spent much of yesterday after the programme going through the entrance to the Community Hero Award, and it was so encouraging to read all the nominations of the amazing people around the Northwest, and I think the final touches are being put to that decision. But such was the extent of entries that we were due to announce the winner tomorrow, but I think we're going to push that back until next week, if that's okay with you guys out there. I know you took a lot of effort in nominating people. And also, too, it allows us the space, because we've another thing running at the moment as part of Irish Music Month. You know, we're big supporters of Irish music on this station, but there's a national initiative to for all stations all across the country to do as much as they can. And we were inviting people to send in their tracks to be shortlisted to a panel of four, to be perform on this programme. Then we'll select one, you guys will select one, and they'll go forward to a national competition. I'll give you more details on that later, but the four finalists are going to be announced on the programme tomorrow. Now, I was just waiting there until such time as Liam Kelly, the chair of the Police Federation for Northern Ireland, was ready to speak to us, and he is now. Liam, good morning to you. I'm sorry to be speaking to you in this context following this awful attack in Omagh last night.
Yes, good morning. Yeah, I mean, an absolutely cold-blooded, callous attack on an off-duty officer involved in community activities. Absolute disgrace, deplorable, and say I want to make this appeal to the community here in Northern Ireland. Please help the PSNI identify who the perpetrators were of this, so we can put them behind bars where they belong.
Obviously, Mr. Caldwell, very seriously injured, and by all accounts as to how events unfolded, this was an attempt on his life. There's just no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, he's been shot a number of times by two gunmen. And what makes it even more deplorable, was in front of his own son in a public area where there were lots of young people, lots of members of the public. I mean, completely reckless, cold-blooded, callous attack. Has to be condemned in the strongest possible terms. And I'm actually welcome the cross-community and our political leaders collectively calling out this behaviour. I mean, I'm being outraged about what it is, because it is an outrage. I mean, in Northern Ireland here, we're 25 years on from the signing of the Good Friday Agreement. Terrorists and those criminals should no longer be in our society, however they are. And again, it's just a stark reminder for our officers that policing in Northern Ireland is a very dangerous occupation, and that has exceptional risks for our officers, both on and off duty.
Yeah, and that condemnation coming from all quarters, as you mentioned, because this is a facility that's not for any, as far as I'm aware, not for any particular sections of the community. There would be children from all different backgrounds here, all for the first time, very sadly, witnessing, getting a look into the Northern Ireland's past, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you can't underestimate the impact that this is going to have. Both, I mean, obviously, it has had a major impact on John and his family, but also the community impact down there. I mean, our assistant chief constable has explained that, and some of the footage that he has seen as people running away, screaming in terror. I mean, it's absolutely deplorable, absolutely terrible that these sorts of things are still happening, you know, 25 years on from the signing of the Good Friday Agreement.
Mm. But credit has been given to two members of the public who ran towards John as he was injured to try and assist him, and also the fast reaction of the emergency services that stabilised him and were able to get him to hospital very quickly to give him the best chance of survival.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that initial intervention from firstly the member of the public and the ambulance crew at the scene have greatly assisted and given John a chance in saving his life. And I mean, the hospital staff, when he arrived at the hospital, who have stabilised him, although he's still critical, are absolute. You know, they receive the utmost gratitude, certainly from myself and my colleagues, about what they have done, because if they hadn't acted in that manner, I think we could be easily talking about a fatality today.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. Liam Kelly, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it greatly.
Thank you.
All right, Liam Kelly there, who's the chair of the Police Federation for Northern Ireland, who has condemned that gun attack in Omagh. Anna joins us on the programme now. Hi, Anna.
Good morning, Greg. How are you this morning?
I'm feeling a little bit vulnerable, Anna. I'm not going to
lie to you. This line seems to be very faint. Is it my phone or yours? Or
how about now? Can you hear me better now?
Oh, I can hear you all right.
Excellent.
I can hear you all right.
Right, now you're
maybe
talking...
Maybe it's just as well if I'm not heard.
Well, we wouldn't have invited you on if we didn't want to hear you, Anna. I feel a bit vulnerable because I think sometimes my grammar ain't great.
Oh, my goodness. Right, okay.
Come here, you are... what is it about grammar that has got you thinking?
I'm just wondering, Greg, do they teach grammar in schools nowadays?
Mm.
You know, when I was at school, it was a very important thing, but I suppose there's not the same need for it now with regard to writing letters or such like, you know, with everything now being done online. But if people were going, say, to a position for, like, if they're going to be authors or reporters or having to correspond in writing in some way, that would they know how to write a letter?
It's a good question. But I wonder would be, and I think too, though, it's not just a new generation coming through. I wonder if people like myself or others who once perhaps would have been able to pen a letter well have lost the skill because we just don't do it any longer.
No, I know that. Well, that would have been one of the things that we would have been taught at school, but I'm talking about 100 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
And I did write a letter to Donald Kavanagh one time. I'm sure he can't be bothered answering, but he was talking about letter writing. So I wrote one in the old-fashioned style. But, however, that's not the other thing. The other thing is how they taught grammar.
Mm.
For instance, the like of the euro, our currency, our Irish currency, the plural of our currency, the euro, is still euro. It's not euros.
Ah.
There's no S on the end of euro for the Irish euro.
Okay.
That's the one thing. And the other thing is, when you're talking to two or more people, suppose you're going down the street and you meet two people and you say, are yous going to the show tonight?
Yous.
Yous are sheep.
That's
E-W-E. Yous. Mm-hmm. It's still the singular for talking to two people, two or more people. Just think, simple things like that, Greg, is what I was thinking about.
Yeah, and words like those and them, sometimes, you know, some apply to,
you know, so
people,
you know,
and some apply to things, don't they?
Yeah, so okay. I just wondered if such a thing is taught in schools. And the other thing is, although it's not grammatical, with regard to St. Patrick's Day,
mm-hmm.
you know, very often you hear people referring to this, Paddy's Day.
Yep.
It's not Paddy's Day. Paddy was known as an Irishman. He certainly wasn't Irish. So it's St. Patrick's Day. So that's just my other little quib.
Yeah, but I noticed too in conversations with young people, Anna, that, you know, they will say, do you want me, shall I put this in the trash? you know, yeah. Or they might say, I actually heard a young person say, and I was just walking down the sidewalk, right? So they're obviously picking up. Now, again, this isn't grammar, right? But I'm just wondering, is this part of it that really maybe they're getting their education from YouTube and the TV rather than the teacher? What do you think of that, Anna?
Well, I'm not sure. The line is a little bit faint, Greg, or maybe it's just my hearing.
No, it probably is the line. But what I'm saying is we're starting to see a lot of Americanisms coming into, you know, general language. Does that bother you?
Oh, perhaps that's part of it.
Anything else that annoys you on a day-to-day basis that we say casual? I suspect maybe sometimes I can be a bit casual with how I speak. Lots of us do. But is it something that you spot almost in every conversation now?
Well, I suppose as long as we are understood, I suppose that's the most important thing. If we speak in a way that we can be understood, I suppose it's not really that important. It's just, you know, I'm one of the old-fashioned type. As I say, I was at school 100 years ago. I left school at the age of 14 years of age. But I do recall the nuns, you know, being very, you know, they thought that grammar was a very important thing and speech of all kind. So God bless the nuns.
I'm not sure if you text much. Yeah, I don't know if you send texts much on your phone, Anna, but I just noticed as well with getting texts from young people, you know, nephews, nieces, my own children, that they communicate for the most part in a completely different language. They'll instead of saying what about you, they'll put in WBU. If they want to say never mind, they'll put in NM. I used to resist it, but unfortunately I find it so widespread now I can't resist it any longer, Anna. So maybe the language is changing into shortening words and skipping syllables and all manner of things.
Well, I suppose that, yeah, I suppose that is right, Greg. I do text, but I don't use that short form that you're mentioning. I do text and I do, do a little bit of work on the computer, but not a lot. I wouldn't be a wizard, but I can get through.
Okay, good stuff, Anna. Listen, it's been lovely speaking to you. Thank you very much indeed. You gave a couple of examples there.
Right, okay, no.
And I'll get Donald to write back to you. Wait, how long is it since you wrote to Donald Kavanagh?
Oh, God, it must be, could be 6 months ago for that matter, like, you know. I'll write a letter to you someday.
I shall write one back to you.
I shall frame it.
Okay, I'll try and get everything correct. Greg. All right, take care. Bye-bye, Anna. That is Anna there. Do you agree with her? I don't disagree with her, of course. I just wonder if we've gone so far with that we can't go back now. And actually, some of the I think there's an awful lot of journalists that some, it depends on which area of journalism that you work in, but in radio, there's not as much written down as there might be in newspapers. So I know a few radio journalists not working here, of course, who perhaps, you know, we all could go back to school a little bit. And that's not a criticism. It's just, I think it's about how often you use it. It's like, how many people out there now listening to me were fluent Irish speakers in their youth? And now struggle to string sentences together. If you don't use it, do you lose it? And I wonder, even if you are taught after you come out of school, I'm still waiting to use algebra, but after you come out of school, if you don't use it, then eventually it goes from you. A caller says, it's terrible that police officer was shot, but it's not all terrorism related. That's the first thing that's brought into it. It could be simply a dispute with someone he knows going over the top. Well, I think there's enough information from the police to rule that out. Now, I'm not saying you are wrong, by the way, but I think they have a fair idea of the motivation for that. Just to warn listeners, I got a call yesterday from an English mobile phone trying to sell me shares on the stock market, and they wouldn't take no for an answer. Then he said, what type of phone are you on? So really, it was just a way of getting me talking, and then he'd hack my phone. Yeah, possibly. But listen, people have different actions. Some use whistles. and all that type of stuff. Right, I'm sorry to skip from one issue to another, and some very, very serious and some not so, but because of this emerging news from last night, we are getting people onto the programme just as they become available. Tom Elliott's an MLA, Ulster Unionist MLA for Fermanagh and South Tyrone. Tom, and I think the tone of our conversation is going to be the same with other guests we've had this morning, a shocking, shocking event we witnessed in Omagh last night.
Absolutely, Greg, and it's despicable. And, you know, I feel very, very sorry for the police officer that has been shot, and indeed his family and his young son who was with him at the time. It's just terrible that can happen. But to do this in a sports complex, you know, in front of young people, where he, as a volunteer, was coaching young people, these people just want to impose their own will on the rest of society, and the rest of society don't want that. So that's where there is a significant difference of opinion here, and the sooner these type of people are taken out of this society, the better.
And, you know, they probably saw the children as collateral damage, in that perhaps one's guard might be down, thinking that someone's not going to do something like this in a highly populated area with children. So it makes it even more sinister, perhaps.
Absolutely. And as I say, these people didn't really care about the young children. They didn't care about bystanders. They didn't care about others that were there in what is a very, very busy sports complex, and people are enjoying themselves. And, you know, sport is a great leveller in life, and it's often a good get out. And I played sport myself during the time of the Troubles here in Northern Ireland, and was a great way of building community relations. It was a good way of getting to know people that you wouldn't otherwise have known. And you know, today's society, it's even better. And to do this at that location, to do it anywhere, is terrible and absolutely atrocious. But to do it there at a sports complex in front of those young people is terrible. And it just shows you the mindset of these people, and that they just don't care about society in general.
And very finally, the consensus is that this type of action has no place in society, and that's a consensus.
Well, it is, but until people that know some of the truths about this, until some of the people that know these individuals start giving them up and start pushing them out of their society and get them imprisoned where they should be, then this isn't going to work either. So there are people around them that know what's happening, and it's time that they made a stance as well and put them out of their society and ensure that that they don't cause these types of actions again.
Thomas Elliott, MLA, thanks for your time this morning. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, goodbye.